Welcome to Getting Work to Work, a weekly podcast exploring the world of work and how creative entrepreneurs, storytellers, and rule breakers infuse their daily lives with creativity and curiosity. How prepared are you for the future of your work? Maybe you're coasting on continual success, not worried about what's on the horizon. Perhaps you find yourself in a season of loss, feeling threatened by the rise of AI tools and frustrated with disruptive change. Regardless of where you're at in your professional journey, today's guest is on the show to teach us how to be change ready. Greg Brown is an entrepreneur, speaker, and author of Spark Action, How to Lead Change That Matters. He helps leaders and teams get ready for the future so they can tackle change head on and get things done. In our conversation, he shares what getting future ready in a rapidly changing world means. We also discuss the need for critical thinking and decision making in the age of AI, how to bring our personality and brand of magic to our work, why it's crucial to shed our corporate skin, what change looks like in the middle of your career, and the importance of taking action and being explorers in everything we do. Show notes for this episode can be found at gwtw.co/776. While you're there, you'll also find the entire podcast archive, links to the short documentary series and weekly newsletter, and the latest merch to show your love and support of the show. All right. Well, Greg, welcome to Getting Work to Work. It is fabulous to talk with you today.
Thank you. I'm really excited to be here, Chris.
Thanks. Well, I love starting with this question. It doesn't matter who I'm talking with, I want to know. But what are you endlessly curious about?
I am endlessly curious about how people function. What makes us tick? Ever since I was a kid, I'm fascinated with that.
Ooh. Was there a moment as a child where you were wondering about that? Or how did that come about?
Well, I think I'd always been curious around people. And I start when I was a kid, I really liked to teach. So I was like, I went to summer camp and then I was a summer camp counselor in training and then a camp counselor. And I sat, my friends around a chalkboard when I was about 12, trying to teach them some math because they didn't know something. But right. I liked to pretend teacher when I was a kid. So I think it was sort of that I started to notice, how do people engage when they want to learn something new? And how do they interact with each other? And what does that look like?
Yeah, that's huge as a kid to recognize that, but also to, that whole idea of how do you learn something new? That has to be a huge question that can drive an entire career.
Well, and I think that's what's driven me. When I was a kid, I wanted to be a teacher and early childhood educator. And then I realized I didn't want to be with kids for 9 months because then I'd have behavioral issues to deal with. And I thought, well, I'll teach at college. Then I realized, well, adults are the same as kids. Having for nine months, all the behavioral issues come out. And it wasn't until, I was in my sort of late 20s, I started to do training and things at work. And I started to really like the concept of education, but more around, how does what we're learning change how we act and how we behave? And, because at work, whether you're a designer, a filmmaker, it doesn't matter. When you're going to a workshop and say, better be relatable to what you're doing, unless it's personal growth. Right. And even then, it better be relatable.
Yeah. Wow. So when you're learning these things about what makes people tick, how they think, how they learn new things, how did you, are there usual typical things that we all kind of like wrestle with, or are we all unique?
Well, I think there's some commonalities and I think there's lots of differences. Okay. So I think, the difference when we're working together to learn something new for work, again, whether, you're learning to use a new piece of technology on a podcast or someone's learning a new tool or how to use AI or ChatGPT or any of that stuff, is really remembering that we all have a certain amount of experience as it is, mm-hmm. and how can we build on that experience? So, you know, none of us like going to trainings or workshops or keynotes or conferences where someone lectures at us because, you know, we're not smart. We are smart. Yeah. All of us are smart. All of us have knowledge. And I think we want to meet whoever we're at when we're trying to teach them something and think about how can I build on this experience? I think that is a commonality.
I love that.
The nuances happen once you get into some of the details. But, you know, we all deserve that level of respect because we all know stuff.
I love that a lot too, because that's generally not the frame that we get when we think about learning something new or even approaching new technology like AI. You know, there's a threat. There's a threat to our livelihood, our personality, our personhood.
We've been using AI for years. What do you think Siri is? What do you think Alexa is? AI is not just generative AI. AI is autocomplete. AI is voice dictation. Artificial intelligence is walking up to sliding doors and having them open automatically before you touch the doors. There's a sensor detecting someone's there and the doors go, vip.
Yeah.
You know, and 50 years ago, that was on Star Trek, but that's been commonplace for the last 20 years, 30 years.
Right. Until it works and we all run into the door.
Yeah, exactly. Right. You still need the backup plan, just like with generative AI.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, absolutely. And it's built upon our experience and trusting that experience.
Yeah. And I mean, the thing is this. Everybody is like, I don't know what I'm going to deal with AI. You deal with it every day in your life now. Everywhere you go, there's AI. Everywhere. Your whole phone is AI. You know, your mobile is filled with it. Mm-hmm. It listens to you and pulls up websites when you're not even, you know, I could be talking to probably a podcast thing will come up on my phone later.
A Zencaster ad, most likely.
Exactly. Your TV is listening. Like, everything's AI.
That's right. So why do we get so, we being, maybe you're a writer and you feel threatened by ChatGPT, or you're an artist and you're threatened by Midjourney. Why do we go there when we are surrounded by it already?
So I think it's really natural for us. So, you know, if we go backwards and just do a little bit of brain science stuff here. If you think about there's three, if there's about 34 layers of our brain, but let's just make it simple, make it about three. You have your cognitive executive functioning part of your brain that does all the planning. You've got your limbic system, which is all that emotional layer, which is the here and now and the reactive part of your brain. And you've got that good old scanner at that back of your brain where your negative bias, you know, you've heard it called your reptilian brain, your lizard brain, the brain stem. It's that scanner that's going, oh my gosh, is there a saber-toothed tiger coming to eat me? Or is my client coming to yell at me? Mm-hmm. Or, you know, what is the threat? So, you know, it's detecting always threats for you. So I think it's really natural for us. And even people who say to me, I always look for the positive. I'm like, that's crap. You don't always, if something comes, if someone fires you from your contract or your job, you're not sitting there at that moment going, what's the positive about this? How am I going to pay my rent? No, you're not. You're like, how the hell am I going to pay my rent this month?
Right.
So screw off. It's not, positive doesn't happen immediately for a lot of people. We all go through stuff of like, how's this going to impact me? What's going to be? Mm-hmm. And when we feel there's a threat to our livelihood, which is one of the most basic threats there are, we are going to go to that. So I think it's natural. And I think we just need to acknowledge that because threats like that, you know, for example, I've been just notified I have a new, you know, version to download on my mobile. I don't feel threatened by it, but I don't have time to do it. So I'm going to put it off. Mm-hmm. Because I don't want to spend 10 minutes finding everything again and resetting passwords. And I don't have time.
Right.
So I think you're right. I do think we do have a natural bias. And I think it's okay to just say, you know, yes, I do feel threatened by this. And what is the biggest thing that's going to happen?
Right. Well, and I think, too, it's
acknowledging the threat sounds like a good first step.
It is.
And not trying to spin it into some perfect case study for your website immediately, but recognizing I feel threatened right now seems to be probably a good first step.
Well, it is. And I think the thing is, you know, whether you're a writer or artist or in marketing or in my line of work, where I speak on change and helping people adapt to change, you know, a writer might feel threatened because of ChatGPT, but if you look at the crap that ChatGPT pulls out, you know, writer doesn't need to be threatened by that, because what we're seeing from the research is with generative AI, same with the artist, you know, with the chat, with, it's not ChatGPT. What's the one called for when you do artistry, the AI for artists?
Yeah, I use Midjourney.
Yeah. So to me, it's not about jobs being replaced. What the research is showing is that we're going to need to ramp up our critical thinking capabilities. Mm. We're going to need to ramp up our abilities to make decisions. Because I can throw my website through ChatGPT. It's going to spew out a bunch of crap. But unless I go through it and go, okay, is this real? Is this accurate? Does this work? You still need that analytical. Mm-hmm. And I mean, Amazon was producing all these people were putting on Amazon these books written by chat, and they were all garbage. Mm-hmm. Garbage. And this is the thing. The world today, in terms of sales and marketing, in terms of the type of business you and I are in, like if we're creative entrepreneurs, I mean, I may not be a writer. I am a writer. You know, I write books. So that to me is creative. I'm a creative entrepreneur too. I may not be like a designer in any sense of the word, which I'm not. But the reality is, you can go to websites and look generic. You're not going to hire that person. Mm-hmm. We need to bring our personalities out. Our own brand of magic needs to come out. And I'm sorry, ChatGPT might give you a different word. Great. But your voice still needs to come through.
Ooh. When you mentioned running your website through ChatGPT, I kind of flash back, because the beginning of my career, I designed and developed websites from about 1997 till probably 2015, 2016.
Yeah.
And what I always noticed was we didn't run it through ChatGPT. We ran it through Google searches for comparison and seeing what people are doing. And it was kind of the same thing, just on a much smaller scale. Totally. And we could label it as research.
Well, and I think the thing is this, you know, sometimes I'll hear from, for example, web designers are great. It's something like, oh my gosh, you know, anybody can design their own website. I'm like, yes and no. Anybody can design a really basic website. But as someone, let's say if I was a web designer, do I really want the person who can only afford $1,500 to hire me to build their website? No. I want the person who's got $15,000 or $5,000 or $10,000 to hire me. And that person who has $5,000 is not going to go to the build your own website factory.
Right.
You know, and I think there's a nice, there's a good thing about this is it can free people up to really, you know, because if the person really has no money and they're like, oh, I'll build my own website, they're not the person that's going to hire someone to be a web, to build your website. Be glad there's a resource for them and focus your energy on getting the people to have some cash.
Yeah, absolutely.
My website, I can change the text in it. But I have to be very careful, because if I change too much, it screws up the whole thing. Because it's very complex, because I run a business, as you do. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What I love what you just said, too, is it frees you up to allow your personality to shine.
For sure.
Why do we think we need to hide behind some veil of generic words, bland phrasing, and corporate BS?
Oh, yeah. Because a few things. The world has been built for people who have 9-to-5 jobs. Generally, creative entrepreneurs don't fit into that. I'm being serious. They don't.
Yeah.
I'm one of those. I've been an entrepreneur my whole life. I've had 9-to-5 jobs. I've had business since I was a kid, selling garage, you know, doing garage sales and stuff and newspaper routes and all that stuff back then. Now that I've had my own business again for another 9 years, what I can tell you, I'm still shedding the corporate skin, still shedding it, because I don't represent anybody but myself anymore, and I haven't. Mm-hmm. And I think the world is cultured to that 9 to 5. It's shifting and changing. And I believe it has shifted and changed. Don't get me wrong. And I do believe, though, we watch TV and they're like, oh, I need to do, I'll become a leader like that. I'm going to run my business like that. I'm like, yeah, that's not the way the real world works. People see TV or they work for a big bank or something. I'm like, yeah, but being a web designer in a big bank is very different than being a web designer running your own business.
Mm-hmm.
One is I need to be able to log on to a website and see what you produce and how you produce. And if I can work with you, I want to see if I can work with you. That's more important to me than anything. Not if you can, anybody that's a buyer will say that to you. Unless you're selling widgets, right? Like,
right.
You know, candles, you know, then you want to showcase your product. But it is the shedding the skin, and it's hard for people.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to allow our individualism to shine because, A, we're worried people are going to make fun of us. People might not like it. People won't buy from us. You know, they're doing that over there, so I should do it. And I go through that too. And then I'm like, but people are buying you, Greg. Put more of you out. I'm constantly telling myself to do that. And it's hard.
Yeah. Where do you start with that? I'm sure there's probably a good first step.
Yeah, I think a first step with that, and this can be for anyone, is everybody has an Instagram account these days. So I don't mean a personal Instagram, but if you have a business or you're a creative entrepreneur, and some, whether writer, artist, designer, does not matter. You're out there somewhere in social media. Instead of just showing all the fabulous things you produce, which is great, put some stuff in that's related to that. So I mean, yeah, you can put a picture of yourself and your cat, which I do, but it has to be tied into what your brand is. So it can be something like when I post a picture of my cat, you know, some of my, you know, adjectives I use to describe my brand or stuff like, you know, it's dynamic, it's educational, it's inspiring. So I have a picture of my cat and I sitting driving because he likes to sit on the console while I drive.
So he
loves driving. So the message to my audience is not everything's what you see is as it seems. My cat loves being in the car. He loves driving with me. He looks out the window. He hangs out. He even uses his litter box in the car. But most people would pigeonhole a cat and say they don't like cars. So there's a message there that's aligned with my brand that we can break out of our self-imposed limitations by. Yeah. So I think a starting point for you is share something more of yourself, but align it with what you do. Mm-hmm. Just tiptoe in. Hey, I learned this today. I did this. Here's a behind-the-scenes pic of me. Everybody loves behind-the-scenes pics.
Yes.
Tiptoe in. Get rid of corporate speak. Yeah. Get rid of that. It's number one thing. Get rid of it. It's hard to get rid of it, but get rid of it. Put it. And the way to get rid of it is not to use ChatGPT. Well, you could. You could pop it and go, give me some real-world language to say this.
Mm-hmm.
There's a way you could use AI to help you. And then you still have to make it your own.
Then you have to edit it, yeah. I love that illustration of your cat, though, because I would classify that as inspiring.
Yeah, so everything I post has to fit.
Yeah.
One of those three categories. So some energy or dynamism about it, which is the work. It's to be educational. Mm-hmm. It can be inspired. But if it's, you know, me eating a plate of sushi looking like crap, I'm not going to post that to my work account.
Right.
You know? So my work has to align with my brand. So creative entrepreneur, I don't care what you are, you want to make sure that whatever you're sharing aligns. Like, what is your brand as a designer? And brand doesn't need to be hire a company for 50 grand to figure it out. It can be like, your brand is you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so what do people say about you? You're fun. You're reflective. You're quiet. You're this. What is that brand? And a quiet brand sells as much as a loud brand because you're going to attract the quiet people who want to work with you versus people who want to work with me. We're loud.
How did you come across those three words for you? Was it a combination of self-reflection and interviewing your clients?
Yeah, well, you can do that for sure. So I'm very lucky in that I've been doing my work for a long time, so I know what my clients say to me, right? Mm-hmm. They're like, oh, we love your energy. Or you know, you're really inspiring, or it's really educational. So I just sort of took those and go, well, what do people say about me? What have people told me over the years? And if someone's new starting out their career, I would say to you, you know, if you're new, what you want to do is ask your friends, what do they say about you? Oh, you're really diligent. Oh, you love to work everything through to completion. Well, there's your brand, you know? So just, yeah, you get some of the brainstorm, some of those words, and not what people, what you think you should be.
Yes. Which is so hard.
It's so hard. Like, what do people say that they like about you? Just brainstorm. Oh, they like that I'm a good listener. No one's ever said that about me. But they might say that about you. They like that you're a good listener. They like that you do good follow-up. They like that you have a good voice for podcasts. You know, what is that? That becomes our brand.
Yeah. I want to go back and touch on, though, that point of it's not what you think people think about you.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the biggest hurdles to actually being yourself and expressing yourself online, is that almost people-pleasing or inauthenticity.
Yeah. And it's, as soon as I get stuck in that, where I'll be like, what do people want to hear? And I'm like, No. I'll take it back and go, what do I need? Like, and I, the way I, there's a couple of questions I ask usually. How can I help is usually my first one. And then, you know, the next thing you want to do is go, what's inspiring me today, or what's interesting to me today? And how does that apply to the people that are my people that I want to buy, or who listen to me, or whatever? So for example, this morning I was talking to someone who runs another company. It was all about how to use AI for predictive change. I'm like, well, that sounds interesting. So I did that. And then I went through his website. I found a really good article that I thought my audience on LinkedIn would really like to read. And so I thought, that's really interesting. So I just, you know, wrote a little thing that said, hey, I was chatting with this guy this morning about X, made me really think about this. And I think I found this really interesting. I think y'all would like it. Have a look. And that, you know, again, it goes with educational, but it was just sort of that moment where I had to still have to write it so it made sense and stuff.
Right.
15 minutes. But, you know, following that thread of inspiration and intuition that you have, I think is really important. You know, if it feels like this is right to post this now, it probably is.
And it probably felt so amazing to that person you connected with that you shared his stuff.
Yeah, he was really happy, but I wouldn't have shared. I wouldn't have offered to share it unless I thought it was good.
Exactly.
And, you know, ultimately it is about, you know, being educational, being inspiring, being dynamic, whatever that piece is. But it's the same for, you know, entrepreneurs. You know, I support an entrepreneur who's a milliner. So she makes fancy hats for people who go to like the Kentucky Derby. And,
oh, wow.
And Royal Ascot, any of those horse racing things. She's very much a creative entrepreneur, and her you know, website's filled with stuff of everything from the basics to making a hat to being at Milan Fashion Week to this to that, and it's just sort of, and she's not posting of herself eating, you know, hamburgers, because it's not aligned with her brand.
Right.
So
I want to go make a hat now. Wow.
Oh, she's so good. She's so great.
When I think about like AI and how sometimes people get worried, then I look at people who make hats, or they make giant art sculptures out of metal, or, you know, all these things. And it's,
I don't need an art sculpture.
Yeah. But at the same time, it's like there are so many opportunities and possibilities if you can remove that fear and that threat.
Well, that's it. Yeah. And I think the trick is this, is just because you make good baskets doesn't mean you're going to be able to sell those baskets, right?
Yes.
You know, I support entrepreneurs and through a bunch of programs pro bono where I mentor entrepreneurs to start and grow their businesses. And just because you make a good basket or a nice candle or a nice shirt doesn't mean anybody's going to buy it, you know? there needs to be business, some stuff around this. You have to test marketing. There's a bunch of stuff you have to do for your business. People have to want to buy it. And if the Gap is doing it, if they're making light blue shirts out of cotton, I'm not sure you're, not to discourage anybody, but you just want to make sure, what is your niche? What's your differentiator? What's your brand?
Yeah.
But once you have that, I think you can really create something unique that people might want to purchase.
What's interesting, Greg, is like when you say that you mentor people at the start of their careers, but I find that for people in the middle, the middle kind of third of the journey where you've been in business maybe 10, 15, 20 years, you've seen a lot, you've done a lot, and sometimes the threat can feel almost beyond existential at that point because you have all of this knowledge of the highs and lows and everything in between. How does someone in that position begin to have the beginner mindset, to have the fresh eyes, and to to get beyond some of those feelings?
I just went through that this year. You know, I've been in business a long time. I'm in my mid 50s now, but I've ran a business and been in a business for many, many years. And you know, I went through that earlier this year going, I have nothing new to say. Everybody's hiring 27-year-olds now. Nobody wants the old white guy. You know, all this sort of stuff. And that's crap, first off. So that fear is not true. And I just say that even though the fear feels real, you know, our beliefs often masquerade as facts.
Yeah.
And it's not a fact. The reality is I had the best year I've ever had last year. So that belief is not a fact, but it's a belief. And, you know, it felt very real until I sort of sat down and go, okay, Greg, what's the reality here? People want you for what? Your expertise, your background, your research, the fact you've done this, the fact you are educational, inspiring, dynamic, you know, all that stuff. And you had and the numbers backed it up because you had a record year last year. So, yes, the fear is real. And the other reality is it's not a fact. So I think there's the ground, there's that the piece can feel weird where we feel we're not relevant anymore, or you know, that people want young, new, pretty, whatever the dynamic is in whatever area people work in. Yet the reality is there's always value for people that are in mid-career, you know, and I've really started to shift my mindset around that consciously, because I used to hear years ago, people would say to me stuff like, you know, it could be gender-based. People would say, well, women don't do that work. And I'm like, well, that's not what I see. I know many women that are engineers, which is true. I know women that are engineers that work in construction. Like, it's bizarre. But that's what I notice. So I think when we train our brain to notice things, we start to notice it. It's like when you buy a new car, you start to notice all the other new cars around. Right? So it's the same principle. If I start noticing that nobody's hiring me, that's not true. Look around, Greg. You were hired tons last year. You had a record year.
Right.
So pay attention to what you notice, because for everybody that says to me, nobody's going to hire someone in their 50s. I'll say, that's crap. I know most people I know do very well that are in their 50s. They're in their peak earning years. You're not making your peak bucks at 20 generally.
Right. You've made all the mistakes, you know, between 20 and 50.
There's ebbs and flows and cycles. And I see, you know, younger colleagues of mine, they're like, I'm doing this and that. And part of me gets a little jealous. And then I back it up and I'm happy for them. And I'm like, I provide something different.
Yeah.
And that's a hard thing. Even for me, who's been doing this for years, I still have to consciously go, I'm happy for that person. And I wish it was me when I was that age, but it wasn't. You know, here I am now. This is the value I bring. And getting really clear about, and here I am all these years later, still saying, I just got to get real clear about what lane I'm in.
Yeah.
You know, and own it. You have to own it.
I have those moments every once in a while where I flash back to when I was 18, 19, 20, early 20s, thinking, God, why didn't I have a podcast then? And I'm like, because that's not who I was then. I would not have been able to carry a conversation. I would not have been able to connect to someone's curiosity and what they're doing. And I needed those 20 years of of, you know, mistakes and hiccups and being willing to sit with someone and kind of learn to listen to them before I could actually do this.
Totally. And I think one of the biggest things that I like sharing with people, I think, you know, we talk a lot about diversity in terms of, you know, equity and inclusion and so on. I think there's also great value. Like, I have people on my team who are in their 20s because I want that, because I don't know half the things they do and they jump around in circles and do all this stuff, which I need them to do. And I want some more people like me and everything in the middle, because then you get diversity of thought. Then you get diversity of tasks and you get a diversity of feelings and diversity of how to do things. And as a result of having, you know, people on that full range of age around me, I get a much more wisdom than just me hanging out with other people that are my age. So I think it's important to look at a diverse, I mean, I have friends that are in their 80s and I have friends that are in their 20s. I really do. I hang out with them. And I have colleagues who are on that spectrum as well. And I hang out with them.
Yeah. I bet your parties are a blast.
I tend, you know, I've tried mixing. Sometimes it works. Sometimes it doesn't. Yeah. Just as a party tip. Sometimes it works. I think if it was a birthday party or a housewarming, that would work. But just to have a group of people that are that disparate come together, I tried that once at a barbecue and it didn't work.
Interesting.
Yeah, it didn't work. It was weird. I bet. But it can work. Maybe one of your listeners can give me a tip on how to make that work.
Right. I'm hoping that there's some people in here that know how to throw parties, because I sure don't.
Yeah. Yeah. Go to my website, bechangeready.com, and send me a note on how to do a barbecue for diverse ages from 20s to 80s.
And then you'll write a perfect blog post about that and share it on LinkedIn.
Possibly.
One of the things that has often come up over the years for this show is, oh, it's a show called Getting Work to Work. And then I would inevitably get the question, what's the future of work? Mm-hmm. I love your spin on this, though. It's not just about the future of work, but being ready for any possible future.
Yeah.
And when I read that, my mind just kind of started to fizzle and blow, which is excellent.
Nice. Nice. Yeah, you know, I think it's important to pay attention to the trends. So, you know, there's three big trends right now, of course, which is, you know, the shifting economic landscape that's happening, changing societal expectations, and of course, the rise of technology and the increase of it. Now, what's interesting is I just did, early February, I did a big conference down in Florida, and it was the 100th anniversary of this organization that I was speaking at.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was really cool. So they had about 500 people in the room. And I opened with, you know, the future work trends, like what I just said. And I said, 100 years ago, when your organization was founded in 1923, or 1924, it would have been, I said, what do you think the three trends of the future work were back then? Increase in technology, shifting societal expectations, changing economic landscapes. They were the same. They were different once you unpack it. I mean, the rise of the gig economy is really big now, and you have to have diversity, equity, inclusion at different levels. And they did, you know, 100 years ago, it was about male, female, gender issues, right? And, you know, shifting economic landscape, it was just before the Depression, just after the Second World War, you know, all of this, and technology was at a very rapid pace then.
Oh, yeah.
So what's underneath is different. But, you know, on the surface, we want to pay attention to what's happening. But it's going to change. So instead of focusing on what the future of work is, let's focus on, you know, how do we make ourselves, how do we make our teams, our clients, our organizations more future ready to handle whatever comes up? And I think that is the part that is the most important, is that we have to be prepared to be unprepared.
Wow. How do you do that?
I think there's a number of things. You know, first off, you know, we all just got through COVID. Like, if you can remember 4 years ago at this time, we were probably all in lockdown in most of the world.
Right.
In the middle of April 2020. Like, I don't even remember that, but I think the whole planet was in lockdown. And, you know, if you think back to what those few years were, not just here in North America, but in Western Europe, other parts of the world, you know, where there's wars going on and other conflicts, COVID was a lower priority then and still is. But for those of us who didn't have those, you know, more intense things going on, you know, we got through it. And we got through it with constantly shifting quicksand, not quicksand, but whatever that sand is that moves. Maybe it is quicksand, but constantly shifting.
Yeah.
The water kept coming in and the sand kept shifting. And we kept walking, oh my gosh, okay, we're locked in, are we locked out? Are we, can we go together? Can we not go together? Can we get through this? What about my business? How am I gonna make money? You know, what about my health? What about not my health? I don't believe these people. I believe that, you know, it was constant. And one of the things I really believe is this, is that every single one of us is way more future ready than we think we are. Because if you can get through COVID, what can't you do? Like, we've hopefully in North America and Western Europe, we'll never have to go through something like that again. And hopefully we'll never have something that's constantly like impacts us on a full societal level.
Yeah.
But if you can do that, there's not much we can't do. And I really believe that. So one of the ways for us, one of the starting points I tell people is I say, look for the qualities, the skills, the mindset, the practices you used to get through the first 2 to 3 years that happened there, or even the first year, if you want or can remember that far back. How did you do it? Mm-hmm. You did it if you're here today. And I'm not saying that to minimize anyone that was sick and didn't make it. But we went through this. Mm-hmm. It's like if I remember doing some work with the UN a couple of years ago, and I had someone on a webinar I was doing. She was from, I can't remember exactly what country, but a country that had been, oh, I think it was she immigrated from Syria. She said to me, I lived through a war. This is nothing for me. No one's throwing bombs at me. So, and that doesn't minimize our experience, how awful it was going through it. Mm-hmm. But if we can do that, there's not much we can't. And I really think that that's a starting point, is to remind ourselves and to get into the nitty gritty. What did I use? Oh, I did short-term planning instead of long-term planning. We all did that. Mm-hmm. You know, what else did we use? I managed my expectations. If something was booked and got canceled, I didn't get upset because it might just get canceled again. Mm-hmm. That's something I've learned because I wasn't good at that before. Mm-hmm. So asking, you know, that getting granular like that, I think can really help people.
What I also heard too is there's a mobility between what is immediate and what is 3 months out, 6 months out, and being able to know when you need to shift from, okay, I don't need to do day of planning now. I can plan for the week or the Absolutely. Month. Or, oh, I need to downshift again back to this daily Absolutely. Planning.
Absolutely. That's a great point. And you know, I think the thing is this, one of the good things, if there's one good thing about COVID, you know, and this is, you know, one thing I've learned talking to thousands of people all over the world in the last number of years, you know, crises are where each of us find our greatness, you know. Crises are where you find your greatness. Crises are where I find my greatness. Crises are where your teams find their greatness. Crises are where your organizations do. And why is that? Because crises push us in ways that we've never been pushed before. Mm-hmm. We all develop a whole new set of muscles to handle the future. In this case, we develop change muscles. Mm-hmm. And those muscles that we've developed, we can continue building as we go. And, you know, just like what you were saying, you might do a 3-year plan, but be prepared. You might be back down to 2 months in no time. Yeah. And it's good. You still want to know where you want to go.
Right.
Like I know, you know, a few years from now where I want to be living, what it looks like, and I'm prepared for it to change.
What's interesting too in that, Greg, is there's this, sometimes this bitterness that can pop up where when you're forced to change and you aren't ready to make the change. And I think sometimes we can hold on, we meaning creative entrepreneurs who maybe in the maybe we had a clear lane, we had a clear mission, a clear vision, and we're disrupted. And so there's a lot of work that has to go in then to shed that bitterness in order to have that open-mindedness again.
Well, you've hit a real key point on the head here, which is, you know, there's really two types of change. There's change you agree with and change that you find disruptive. Mm-hmm. Change you agree with, you handle really differently than change that's disruptive. Yes. Disruptive, I mean, you disagree with, comes from someone above, comes from a client you don't like, goes against something you disagree with or agree with, you know, whatever your definition of disruption is. And our goal is to shorten the period of time it takes for us to hear something disruptive and respond appropriately to it. Sometimes you do have to take some time. Mm-hmm. But the more experience you handle, you get handling disruptive change, which we've all had quite a bit of experience the last few years, the easier it is for us to respond quickly. So the amount of energy that you're expending going, oh my gosh, I don't like that idea, I wish the client hadn't done that, la, 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 you know, which I get into, shortening that down to, okay, I disagree with what they're saying. What do I need to do to take action so I can make this happen? So you're not wasting that energy, because people don't have more energy to give. Everybody's busy. So yeah, you hit the nail on the head. Disruptive energy takes more time. Yeah. Your productivity is always going to drop a little bit.
And I think there's, I don't know if it's grace for yourself when you're in those moments.
For sure.
Self-kindness. Being okay with that productivity dip, because I think for myself, when I hit those moments, I want to try to like keep the productivity at the same level and push through. And I think that has been one of the contributors to burnout that I faced.
For sure. Yeah. You hit the nail on the head. Yes, there's peaks and valleys. Sometimes you're going to work more than other times. Just that's the ebb and flow of life. But, and there's a big but to this, is you can't maintain that, because that's when burnout does happen, which you rightly labeled. I think, you know, the big piece about what you're saying is that being, sometimes you do have to get into the negative to get out of it. And it's not about putting a positive spin on a bad situation. It's like if you're standing in front of your house and it's just burned down and a well-meaning neighbor comes up to you and says, hey, Chris, at least you can get a new recording studio out of this. You're going to be like, hey, shut up. I just lost all my stuff. I got to call insurance. Like, bug off.
Yeah.
I'll use some other words. My house burned down. I'm in the shed. Because what you really want from the neighbor at that moment is not the positive spin. You want her to be in the crap with you to say, hey, this really sucks. What can I do to help?
Yeah.
So not to put a positive spin. So sometimes you got to get in the negative. And, you know, sometimes I'll just get into it. I'm just like, I'm going to come out of it, but I can't force that.
Yeah.
And sometimes, you know, you do have to, you know, taking action is a positive step. It doesn't mean putting a positive spin. If you've gotten laid off from your job and been downsized out, it sucks. So if someone says, hey, at least you can get another job, you're gonna be like, screw off, I just got laid off. But what that can mean is you might take a positive approach, which is just like, go talk to them. Hey, I just got freaking laid off. Can you believe it? That's starting the movement of change versus just like, oh, yay, I got laid off. I can go get another job. I'm so excited. I don't know how I'm going to pay my rent this month, but who cares? Said no one.
You mentioned action a lot, and you wrote a book called Spark Action.
I did.
What are some of the principles for action that people don't really understand or realize that they are great at?
Well, I think taking action, you know, get the word pause. To take a positive approach means you can take action in the face of negativity. It doesn't mean positive action. It just means I'm going to take some action. My house is burned down. I'm going to call insurance. That's action. That's positive action. It's not like, woohoo, I'm going to get a new kitchen. You might get a new kitchen 6 months from now or a year from now. Then you can be happy about that. Mm-hmm. But right now it sucks. And I think the challenge for some of us when we're trying to help ourselves and others take action is we talk ourselves sometimes out of things before we've even explored it. So, you know, I'll work with people. I'm thinking about a designer I worked with a number of years ago. So this was a guy who was an evaluation consultant. No offense to him in his evaluation, but sounds boring to me.
I have no idea what that is.
Yeah, it's someone who evaluates programs and sees if they're working. Woohoo, yay. Not my title job. And anybody listening, don't write into Chris or me telling me how much I'm grading on your grade. We need people like you. It's just not me. And he wanted to be a designer, an interior designer, actually. No training, but he had a real flair for it. He's like, well, I don't know if I should. I'm like, but you're talking yourself out of it. Start down the process. Just because you want to explore being a designer doesn't mean you're going to quit your job today. Hello? Like, you know, you're just going to explore. We can explore, not make a decision. We can talk. You know, people do this in meetings all the time. People are like, what do you think we should do? And they're like, and someone will be like, well, let's do this. That won't work in my area. We've all heard that and said that. And yet, you know, no one brings ideas to meetings fully formed. Most of us don't bring our own ideas to ourselves fully formed. We're like, that interests me. I'm going to try that. And then we talk ourselves out of it before we've even started down the path. So what I tell people is, as a starting point, just allow yourself to explore. Be an explorer. You don't need to make a decision. You know, when I did career counseling with people when I was younger, this would be a common thing. Oh, I'd really like to apply for this job. Oh, but they're asking for this. Oh, but it's really, oh, but I love the people I work with. Oh, but I'd really love to do. I'd be like, let's just start down the path. And then but what if I'm going to miss the people? Like, you can always turn down the job if you're offered it.
What?
You can turn it down. You have choice. You can say no. If this interests you, go down that path. If you meet the basic criteria, don't talk your... People say to me stuff like, I used to love buying and selling real estate for fun. And people want money. And people would say to me, oh, I've never bought my first home. I'm really worried. I'm like, go look at an open house. But I can't buy. I'm like, go look at an open house. I'm not saying you're going to put an offer in on the house. Start looking. See what's there. Expand your horizons. But I don't have money. I'm not telling you to put an offer. I'm saying go on Saturday at 2 o'clock to this address. I'm not saying go to your bank and write a check. But we go there. So I could, if I say, you know, big thing for anyone listening is don't talk yourself out of something before you've even tiptoed down the path. Start at 5%, 10%. If you get to 50% and it doesn't look good, then say no. But start. Don't talk yourself out of something before you've even tried it.
Yeah. Which is great advice, especially when writing a book, because you can talk yourself out of writing a book before you've even started.
Well, and that's the thing, you know, with my book, you know, I wrote the book because I was working with people for so many years who wanted to create change on the planet, whether they were entrepreneurs, whether they were self-employed individuals, whether they were contract writers, designers, ghostwriters. Like, I've worked, you know, across the spectrum with different groups of people, videographers, like, you name it. And, you know, the number one thing people talk themselves out, and I wanted to give them a roadmap for how can I create change in my life and create change in other people's lives. It's really going to make a difference. Because the great thing about creative entrepreneurs is this, and the great thing about being an entrepreneur, the great thing about small business is it allows us to bring our creativity to the world. And it shifts the world as a result of that. Yes, it's important to work at a bank. Yes, it's important to be a janitorial custodial staff. We need those. Mm-hmm. It's not meant for everyone. My work's not meant for everyone. Your work's not meant for everyone. And, you know, as creative entrepreneurs, we want to think about, what do I need to do to bring my work to the world? And yet it has to involve, and this is where my book goes in detail, getting out of what we think are the benefits to our work and getting into the head of our audience, our clients, our prospects. What do they need to know to say yes to buy what I want them to buy? Mm-hmm. And that's the starting point. Get into the head of whoever your audience is. Clients, buyers, doesn't matter.
I love that emphasis too on how do I get them to buy what I want them to buy? Because I think sometimes at any stage of your business, you can, again, go back to that, I think they want this, when in reality they don't.
Yeah, and sometimes, or, you know, what also I find is they think they want this, but what they really mean is this, which is in my world quite true. They're like, we want this, 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 this. I'm like, yeah, that's your language. This is what I'm going to do. And guess what? It will match that. I don't argue with them about that. But when I hear it, I'm like, okay, they're really meaning this. They're really meaning this. They're not using the words I use. They're meaning this. So for example,
that's a powerful, powerful way to look at it.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I think, you know, it's like I could say on my website something like, I work with organizations to build their future readiness so they can, I don't know, blah, 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 you know, with this big words and big language. Or I can say, you know, I help leaders and teams get ready for the future so they can tackle change head on and get things done. Like, you understand that. You're not in my world, but you understand that. So that's what needs to be on my website so people get it. And yes, you want fancy, and you have fancy things later on. So you want to show that you know something. But to bring people in, it's like when you go to a, I was at an event a couple weeks ago and I said, oh, so what do? You know, to the person beside me. And they're like, blah, 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 blah. I had no idea what they were talking about. And I could say stuff like, oh, I do keynote speaking and I speak on stages about change. And the person will be like, oh, that's nice. I don't know what that is, but that's nice. Versus I help leaders and teams get ready for the future so they can jump into change and get things done. Yeah. Like, that's words that make sense from their point of view.
Right. And what's so powerful about that too is it's simple, yet you can unpack it to any level and be like, there's so much underneath that, as simple as it is.
Well, and that's it. And, you know, someone told me early on in my career, I wish I could remember who, to quote them, but you have to be prepared to talk about your work at about three or four different levels.
Yeah.
Like at that, you know, I help leaders and teams tackle change head on to, you know, I work with organization to develop future ready teams that ignite transformative change to, you know, let's build a future ready culture together. Like, so you can see sort of that's three, they weren't the best examples, but you know, one's real simple, one's in the middle, and one's about building future ready cultures, which, you know, senior folks want to hear, but frontline folks don't want to. But they don't want to hear build future ready culture until if I haven't brought them in to, okay, what is Greg really doing here?
Right.
It's like getting work to work. We can make that really complex, or we can really make this, it's about getting our work to work. Like, this is, like, there's layers.
There's a lot of layers. And again, it's intentional in that because, you know, you can talk to one person who, let's say they're a filmmaker in Massachusetts, and they could have an entirely different point of view, an entirely different clientele than, you know, a filmmaker in Hollywood.
For sure. And yeah. And I mean, you hit a really great point about that because, you know, in areas like filmmaking, which are not, I mean, I'm lucky I do a lot of video stuff because of my work in speaking. So I work with videographers and producers and camera people. See, I don't even know the right words to use, but I know how to block myself on stage and I know how to test things. Usually because I have a good AV team behind me. But the piece around that is, let's say a filmmaker wanted me to invest in their film, in their production somehow. They need to come to me with language I'm going to understand. You know, don't come to me with a pitch that's like, we're going to use this money to do blah, blah, blah. I'm like, I don't know what that camera language was. I mean, oh, we're going to use this so we can film this with this piece of software so it looks like this. You got to spell things out for people because not all of us are as smart as you because you're an expert. Everybody's an expert in their world, you know. And it doesn't mean you're dummying things down. That's not what it means. Right. It means you're simplifying things so the rest of us can understand it.
Yeah.
And if you don't know what that is, go to your doctor. Next time the doctor goes, blah, blah, blah. You're like, can you tell me that in simple language I understand?
Aren't I supposed to ask them about this medication, Greg?
Yeah. Like, what does arthritis mean? What does this mean? What is rheumatism? What is, you know, ask what it means. Mm-hmm. Same with accounting. My accountant's like, well, I need to know about blah, blah. I'm like, I don't know what that is. Is that an invoice for this? What are you asking?
Yeah.
Because I don't know the difference between common shares and dividend shares, and I don't care to know.
And I think for creative entrepreneurs who aren't used to that, they think that it's dumbing down instead of simplifying. Opening yourself up to those questions is a great starting and ending point, because if you're not open up to those questions, you're defensive, you're going to be offensive to people that might want to work with you.
Well, it's like if I'm looking at a videographer's website, I have a videographer I work with, so I'm lucky. But, you know, if I'm looking at someone's site and they're like, I do blah, 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 and they use all these fancy terms, I'm going to go right to the next. Mm-hmm. Because if they're using one of those fancy terms, you're only going to get people that hire you that understand those fancy terms. And I'm okay with that if that's what you want. Mm-hmm. If that's your filter, then that's your filter. But right. For most of us, it's not a filter. We don't want to use that as a filter because we want to get business. And what we want to do is I want to see, you know, someone's website. I was looking at a photographer's website the other day that said something like, you know, I help you uncover your story via photos or something. It was so well done. Like, you do? That's really cool. He didn't give me like, I use 4D HDHK, this camera with this, and I use this with this color. I help you develop your story through photo. I'm like, holy smokes, I get that.
Yeah.
I want to phone you now and do that.
Well, Greg, this has been such an insightful conversation. You've shared so many amazing things about being future ready and making decisions and taking action. Is there a bit of wisdom that you want to leave in the minds of the audience right now?
Just remember that you're more future ready than you think you are, and that you can do more than you think you can. And I'm not saying burn out, but if you can handle the last 4 years, there's not much that you cannot do.
Well, final question for you, Greg. Is there a book, podcast, or resource that's currently blowing your mind right now?
Other than yours?
I appreciate that.
Yeah. A book, podcast is blowing my mind right now. That's a good question. What's blowing my mind right now is more about the research that I'm seeing that AI isn't going to kill us all. it might in those movies, but right. That it's really going to leverage and help us do our work better. And I think I don't have a recommendation for anybody to go to for that. But, you know, if someone's a designer, a writer, an artist, a graphic designer, whatever they are, you know, Google AI and graphic design, AI and film produce, and see what people are saying about it. Because I think that that will give you the capabilities to understand what's going on around you, what the impact is. And then ask the question, how can I use this?
Yeah. I think one of the best things that I did was try to avoid the knee-jerk reactions of like, oh my God, we're going to die. You know, the robots are going to take everything. And really looking at the use cases and the examples of how people are using it.
Exactly. And I think, you know, really getting into how can I use this in a way that's going to make sense? Because the trick is this, everyone listening, your skill set is going to be more in demand as a result of AI. They're going to need you to determine what is good, what is bad, what works, what doesn't work. Because AI just spews out stuff. Mm-hmm. You still need to have your critical thinking and the creative thinking to determine what's good.
Right. Let alone the discussion around aesthetics.
Absolutely. Because that's all, that's critical thinking, right? It's decision making.
Yeah.
And everyone's, you know, hopefully AI will free us all up to do a few more things of the higher level thinking that we all want to do in our work. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, that's my tip for anyone listening. Research how it's impacting your area and look for what's good about it and how you can use that.
Nice. Well, Greg, thank you so much for being a guest on Getting Work to Work. It has been a pleasure talking with you today. I'm grateful for the ways that you challenge people to think differently and beyond where they may be stuck, or maybe they don't know they're stuck. And I just, it helps me to see more possibilities than I was seeing before. So thank you for that.
You're very welcome. And thank you so much for having me on Getting Work to Work. It's always good to talk about the workplace and how we can interact more thoughtfully with our clients, with our colleagues and our coworkers. And I'm so glad your podcast is contributing to that.
There were several quotes I wrote down from this interview with Greg, but my favorite was when he said, "We have to be prepared to be unprepared." Where does your mind go when you hear that? Immediately, I went to money. But I think it's more than that. I think this quote can also address things like mindset, skills, our network. And in the face of uncertainty, the question really becomes, how can I be more resilient? How can I be more curious and explore new technologies without feeling threatened or shut down? Who do I know who can help me learn or open my mind? Preparation for the unknown looks and feels like a lot of work, I know, but this work is the difference between being future ready and fighting change every step of the way. I'm probably going to have to turn this conclusion into next week's monologue, so stay tuned for that. Be sure to check out Greg's work. You'll find all the links in the show notes page, gwtw.co/776. Until next time, may creativity and curiosity fuel your life.